This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We are back. We weren't here last week because there was a special program, though I did a quick ring in for 5 minutes and did some stuff. And of course, I'm joined by the lovely Joy. Hello, Joy.
Hi, Tao. Good evening.
It's good to have you back.
It couldn't be as wonderful as we are.
No, nothing can beat us. But we actually have some great guests. Why don't you tell us a little about them?
Tonight, we're going to talk to Alex and Genevieve from Ekankar. Now, you might be asking, what on earth is Ekankar? Well, stay tuned and we're going to start talking about it and we're going to get them to answer some questions about it. So, first up, folks, what is Ekankar and how long has it been around?
Well, that's a very big question. I think Ekankar has been around since the dawn of time, since sort of consciousness was on the planet. I think the wonderful thing about this spiritual path for me is that Sri Paul Twitchell, who's the modern day founder of Ekankar, what he did was explored all of the religions of the world and spent time finding out what was the really essential qualities in every religion. What was the thing that led people to inner spiritual freedom? And he tapped into, I think, a really beautiful inner way, if you like. And that's really what Ekankar is about. And I think it's always been something that's been essential in all religions on the planet.
But Paul actually founded it in, I guess, the modern day.
He did. Yeah,
way, as we know Ekankar. So yeah. Back in the 60s?
Yes, he did. I think he took the best that he found from everything that he had explored and studied and created a path, a modern-day path. And what he really did was he touched into the essential quality, which is the light and sound, and how that flows from the inner worlds into our lives, and then started to teach people to tap into that quality, that very profound spiritual essence that exists for us on the planet.
Yeah, well, we saw that sort of light and sound was described as like the twin aspects of the Holy Spirit or the divine life currents that mm-hmm. flow from God. How do people experience or tap into the light and sound?
There's a lot of ways to do that. I mean, just living a very true life, you tap into the light and sound. But in Ekankar, we teach that the light and sound comes through daily contemplations, through doing the spiritual exercises of Ek. There's so many. I mean, there's just so many spiritual exercises one can do. We find that by learning how to deepen your trust, how to deepen your understanding of yourself, and through I don't know. What do you think, Genevieve? I'm just a bit lost on that.
Oh, okay. Well, I feel, speaking to people who've never heard about Ekankar, Ekankar is a religion, and like most religions, you try and find a way to connect with God. I was brought up a Catholic, and so I prayed and tried to connect with God that way. When I became a Nekus, we did a chant which we call the Hu. Most people have heard of about Om. We chant Hu, and when I first chanted Hu, I saw the light, like literally. Mm. And so that was my first experience with the light, and I was a bit confused by it. I didn't understand it, but I loved it, and it felt very loving, and it felt like a divine connection. And so that was my first experience with the light. And as I kept going in Ekankar and studying Ekankar, it's the way of connecting with God. So you either see the light or sometimes you hear a sound, and that's the sound of God.
So what is the soul according to Ekankar?
So we don't say you have a soul. We say we are soul and we have a body. And so in Ekankar, soul equals soul. So you can be the richest and the poorest on earth, but at soul level, you're equal and you always will be. You can't outdo each other. And God loves you because you are soul, and God loves everybody.
And soul is in everything, in all animals, in all plants. Yes. It's a state of consciousness. And I think the wonderful thing about Ekankar for me is that as you study the discourses of Ek, as you study the books, as you sort of learn and share your life experiences with those around you, you unfold to a deeper understanding of how the light and sound works in your life. And that's really a joy.
You talk about soul travel. What is soul travel?
Most people would have heard about astral travelling, mm-hmm. where you can leave your body. By doing what we call spiritual exercises, we can actually go outside ourselves and maybe view your life from... You've heard of people who've had near-death experiences, mm-hmm. and they're looking down. It sort of feels like that. So there's purposes for soul travelling. We believe in past lives. So there's an issue we need to work out, and it's time for us to really see what we've done. We will soul travel and go back in time, and there's your answer. You're having this situation today because of something that might have happened in the past.
And it's why the dream state's so important as well, as a tool, if you like. In when you're out of your body in the dream state, you can do and experience wonderful things.
When you talk about the dream state, are we yep. talking about that, you know, I might do, I guess, what is akin to a form of meditation and maybe I reflect on these things? Or are we also talking about maybe that that actually does it, is this occurring while people are asleep, like literally with their dreams, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you're asleep, you're usually out of the body anyway. And it's really a skill that you develop and learn, and that's how to wake up actually in the dream state itself. And you can refine that over time. And, you know, I mean, it does take, for many of us, it takes many, many years to really achieve those sorts of levels. But some people have a real ease and grace with it right from the word go. But everybody talks if you talk to people, everyone will share a dream experience with you at some point or another in their life, something that's quite profound for them that they've remembered since childhood, you know. And it's such a wonderful place to really explore your who you are as a soul.
We came across the term spiritual travellers. Is that just a name for people, you know, when they're doing this, or is this a specific role that people have?
Well, it's a wonderful... Actually, that's a great question. Sri Harold Klemp, who's the Living Ek Master, the current Living Ek Master, who lives in Minnesota, you could say that the other side to him, which is the really great value for me of being in Ekankar, is that we have two aspects of leadership, if you like. We have the Living Ek Master, and Sri Harold writes the books, he speaks at seminars, and he's the sort of the outer teacher. But the other side to the Living Ek Master is the what we call the inner master, and that is a spiritual traveler. It's that part of a very high expression of God for us in this earthly life, and that's the really important connection we have and develop our relationship with over time is with this inner master, who's an inner traveler. And this is somebody who's gone before, you see, and who's kind of created a way for you. And it's not a guru. It's not somebody that you within yourself that you're identifying as a person. It's actually a greater state of consciousness, and it's like a way shower, if you like, somebody who's gone up the mountain before you.
I just want to ask, what is it like for you to be part of a religion that most people have never heard of, or if they have heard of it, they immediately say, "Oh, that's a cult." What's it like to be a part of that?
Well, I guess, when I was brought up Catholic, we weren't really... Well, I was brought up in Mauritius, that's a dual one. So we weren't really encouraged to explore other religions. That's changing now. I'm part of Interfaith, and part of our what we do is to educate people, if you like. And so I get quite a few occasions where I can talk about Ekankar now. Some people have even been to our centre where they have a half an hour conversation with us, and they can ask all the questions. And at the start, it all seems very bizarre, but when you say to people, but do you dream, do you sometimes feel your dreams very real, they'll say yes. And I'll say, well, do you have deja vu, do you feel like you've seen something or met someone before, they'll say yes. And so there's aspects of it that people can relate to, and it's all part of our religion. So once you start explaining...
Do you ever have people that are... in a sense aggressive, or that because of some sort of, you know, that assumption that it's, yes, like, oh, you guys are weirdos or something like
you
that
know, one of the very first interfaith meeting I went to, there was this fellow there, I won't name him, and he was taking down names, and he was quite rude and aggressive. And he kept coming, though, and he started to hear about us and what we did. And to this day, every time I meet him, he apologizes. And I'm saying, look, it's all behind us. Don't worry about it. But he just had this natural fear. What are you doing? And what are you doing with Interfaith? We're not going to sit alongside you. But that changed, and that's an interesting challenge. And it's fine if people feel threatened by it or don't really like it. That's their choice as well.
I think that was a conversation, because we were actually at the same interfaith event, at least on one occasion. I remember talking about that. I think one of the sometimes what happens is that interfaith becomes, oh, well, these religions are sort of all the same.
Yes.
And then over time, we have to keep working on people to go, okay, and these ones, and these ones, and these ones. You know, we have to sort of keep going from there.
That's
but it's good to hear that actually with that exposure, it really does make a difference. It's not always just a case of, you know, oh, we only attract those that are sort of already okay.
Yeah.
That with time, people do become better. Now, we were actually talking, I think you wanted to jump in a little and talk about what we were saying before about some of the interfaith.
No, more about the cult thing. That,
oh,
you
yes.
know, that, about how we felt about that. Yeah, I remember in San Francisco when I first found out about Ekankar, I was living there. And also being a gay person, I you know, you sort of had the double whammy of the general population and what they think of us as gay, what they think about of us being a religious person, can we have a faith, you know, and also gay people themselves often think that if you're in a on a spiritual path, then you must be under some sort of straight authority, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was really important to me that I didn't have a guru and I didn't have that sort of structure, and there was a lot of that around on the West Coast of America in the 70s and 80s, let me tell you. So I sort of began to explore Ekankar as a path, and I just really found it free and open, and it was all about individual spirit and how you brought more light and sound and love into your life. And it took me a while. I felt really good at the core about it, but it took me a long time to just really feel open and free. And of course, we accept anyone in Ekankar. It's just such a wonderful thing. Plus, we had a gay group that developed for a while in America as part of Ekankar, the organization.
Were you brought up in a religious household?
Yeah, I was. I was an Anglican in the Anglican church. My mother was a very strong Christian. I was an altar boy, did all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So you ended up in San Francisco. How did that sort of all come about?
I decided to leave Australia after university. I wasn't going to come out here. I just couldn't do it. Not in 1973. I just didn't have the guts. And I just took off around the world. I was going to go to university in the States and do postgrad work. And then I got sidetracked going to San Francisco, and I came out there.
I'm not surprised you got sidetracked in San Francisco. It's a great place, isn't it?
Yeah, on the corner of 19th and Castro, coming out, yeah.
So who did you come out to?
To the guys I had moved into a house with.
It wasn't just some stranger you found on the corner of Castro and 19th.
You just shook a guy on the corner and said, I'm gay!
And he said, so are we! how did you found Ekankar. How did you find Ekankar?
It goes out to a long story, but the small version is that I was looking for a spiritual path. I sort of had a reawakening, and it was around the beginning of the AIDS crisis. And we were doing a lot of work and a lot of trainings. And I did a training with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, which was one of the last trainings she ever did. And I was very privileged to be a part of that. And as I got to know the people involved, I was just finding myself that I was opening up to really what I felt I was really missing something. And I'd come out of the ghetto, if you like, in San Francisco, the gay ghetto, of years just being in that world and coming back more into society, more into straight society, and working with people. And the AIDS crisis was so profound for all men and women in the city, you know, so...
Mm-hmm. And so did you actually, was it a friend that you knew, or did you just read about it somewhere, or?
I drove past it. I drove past the offices of Heckenkar. I thought it was a Swiss precision instrument company. But I was selling a product at the time, and I went in and tried to sell it to them, and that's how I found out about it. They gave me a book. I took it home. I did some of the spiritual exercises, and I went out of my body. So I went, wow. This is fantastic.
So you've been in Heckenkar a long time.
30-something years, yeah.
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 So do you sort of mentor other people now, or do you – well, I don't know what you call it. Do you work with other people to
– Well, we have a – there's 17 years of discourses in Heckenkar. They've been written by a couple of the Living Act Masters, and – as you grow in Heckenkar, you can take on a role of a teacher, if you like, someone who helps in the classes, and so you can sort of lead a class on any year. So I've done all those.
What are some of the discourses that you...
Okay, there's dream discourses, there's soul travel discourses, there's discourses called light and sound, and we start with a discourse called The Easy Way, which is an introduction to Heckenkar, and that's for new people who've come in to want to share the path. And you can do that for a couple of years before you make a decision to really take Heck fully aboard. So it's a really great way to explore the path and find out about it.
So do you have a membership, or, you know, like churches have baptism or membership rituals? Do you have anything like that to become an Eckist?
We don't have baptism. You choose to become an Eckist, and it's a yearly donation, so it's not a fee as such. So you give whatever you like, and if you can't, you don't either. And I coordinate for classes in Melbourne here. So when someone new joins up and they want to do a class, I organise a teacher and a group get together, and they talk about their spiritual experiences. They talk about their dreams. They talk about their struggle. And we're not there to solve it. We're just helping them to get to the wisest part of themselves so they can solve it themselves.
So do you have, like, weekly meetings, or how does that work for you guys?
Every Friday we meet at the centre, which is in Moorabbin in Tuck Street, and we chant Hugh, which you had a bit of a demonstration before. We do that at 8 o'clock every Friday night, and then we meet as a group, which would be like a church service, twice a month, once in Box Hill and once in Moorabbin, and then the classes are organised all throughout the week.
So what form does your church service, we shouldn't call it church service, what form does your...
Yeah, we call it a worship service, and it's great. There's a reading, there's a topic, and there's usually a guest speaker that will speak about the topic. So I think last month we had What Animals Can Teach You. So someone had an animal story, and then after that we break in groups and we share stories, and there was animal stories galore on that day, as you can imagine.
You look on Facebook, there's always animal stories.
So I just wanted to confirm then, because sometimes I usually see it written down. It's pronounced Hugh, right?
Hugh.
Yes.
Because I usually see it spelled, well, at least in English, H-U is usually, but it's pronounced in Hugh. Hugh. I was wondering, I guess, how long people do that. I guess, you know, how long is a piece of string? But yeah.
We encourage to do 20 minutes a day. Personally, that's the first thing that will come out of my mouth when I wake up. I will do the Hugh before I do anything else, and before I go to sleep, and just during the day, if I get a little bit need a bit of calm, I'll do that. It's just whenever you feel the need.
And people also do it in groups?
Yep, you can. We do it on Friday night. We do it in groups, or you can do it by yourself, whichever.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, Om is probably the most popular chant in the world.
Yeah.
It's like that, and probably for the same reason, to touch the divine and to center yourself.
I just wanted to quickly we do have a few more people that have been helping us out here. Also, Rachel of Richmond came up, and also, I might have mentioned that one, and Craig from Parkdale. But also we had a little message from Tristan just saying that he's loving the show and he just got home and was having a little glass of wine while listening. I'm glad you're enjoying, so thank you there. But we're actually going to have one of the songs that you've given us. Our lovely echists have actually provided us with a little bit of music for tonight. This one is called You Must Find Yourself. Maybe you could quickly tell us maybe about these songs, or maybe is there something about echist music that you could tell us about?
Well, I find ek music very uplifting, and I used to play this to my girls when they were younger, because I used to say, whatever you're going to do in life, you need to know yourself first. And I think this song illustrates that really well.
Now, we actually have managed to wrangle our echists.
They agreed.
They agreed to actually, we were talking about, you know, the Hugh chant and that sort of thing, and they've actually agreed to do a demonstration, a live demonstration for us. So maybe you could take us through what's going to do, because also I think if people at home would like to try it out themselves, they could as well, right?
Absolutely. The Hughes for everyone on the planet. And we have a wonderful program where I think we've sent out about 5,000 Hughes CDs through the Mind Body Spirit Festival and different ways, you know. So anyway, here we go. What we do is, as a rule, we get into a comfortable position. You can lie down or you can be sitting. Don't do this in your car, or with your eyes closed anyway. Just put your concentration, just focus, be mindful of the space between your eyebrows, and just close your eyes, just concentrate there. And we sing the sound, and I'll do it first. It's you. So we'll do this three times together, all right? You.
That was absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for that. I'm not sure. I hope that manages to travel over the air the same way it was here. But thank you so much for that. That's
you're welcome.
Absolutely wonderful.
Great.
And you talked earlier when you did it about imagining 10,000 people.
Yeah, that's true. Major seminars.
It would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Genevieve, you talked a bit about the fact that you come from a Catholic upbringing.
Mm.
How did you get from that to being an echist?
Mm. As a very young Catholic, I loved God right from the start and was very devout, and just kept going to church and praying and trying to reach God. I had a cousin who was an echist. There was rumours that she was into black magic, so of course I was interested in talking with her. So she lived in Brisbane, and when she came to Melbourne, I said, you know, come and meet me at Mum's. And it was interesting. I had questions. And as soon as she walked in, my third eye, which I didn't even know I had, started to vibrate, if you like. And I found that fascinating. So we sat down, and at the time I was doing Reiki, and so I thought I was pretty out there. And I asked her about past lives, I asked her about astral travelling and all of that. And she knew all about that, but then she started to talk to me about karma, and she started to talk to me about reincarnation, and she started to talk to me about masters. And I thought, oh, how, where did she get that from? Anyway, she wasn't very pushy, and she just left a couple of books, which I put in the drawer for a year and never read again, got on with my life, and it was fine. I can remember it. It was in March. I had a dream. And in the dream, this man comes, and he takes my arm, and he links it with hers. And I'm thinking, that's great. She's going to join Reiki. It didn't occur to me. I recognised the man because the man was the living Ekmaster, and I saw his picture in her wallet, so I knew who he was. That dream changed my life because it called to me, and eventually I had a big enough experience for me to leave a church behind, to my mother's horror, I must say. And it's interesting because this story with my mum becomes full circle, because my mum was diagnosed with cancer in 2012, and I was looking after her. And as you may know, when people prepare to die, they want to settle things. And she was very concerned that I was going to hell, and spoke to the counsellor there about this. And the counsellor said, well, what religion do you belong to? And I said, Ekankar. She said, I'm going to look it up. And I said, look, maybe I should bring Mum's priest. She said, no, I've got a friend who's a scholar. And she comes back the next day. She said, your mum's right, you are going to hell. So that wasn't helpful. So I did ring Mum's priest. He was a young fellow, lovely guy. And he said to Mum, you brought her up as a Catholic. You took her to church. She's had her baptism. She's been confirmed and a communion. You live by example. As an adult, she's free to choose her religion. Judge her not by where she goes to church, but how she's been treating you and how she treats the world. And that gave my mother peace. She never spoke about it again. And I'm forever thankful to that priest, because that was the truth.
Now, you got married.
Twice. So,
okay. Oh, really?
This is getting more exciting. I thought it was once.
No. I got married. I eloped, actually. When I was 20, I went to Mauritius, and I married this lovely man and had three beautiful girls. And then after a while, I realised that really wasn't the right fit for me. And I think I had always known at the back of my mind that perhaps this was not my path. And so the year, of course, I became an Ekis, I came out the same time.
How did your mother cope with that one?
Well, she didn't take that very well either.
Your poor mother.
But she understood my heart, and she knew it was all about love. She knows that I love my children and I love whoever I'm with. So first it was a lovely man, and then it was a lovely woman.
So you married this lovely woman?
I certainly did. 2013, we went to Minneapolis. Our temple is there, and the gay laws, the laws changed the previous year. No, actually, I think it changed that year in August, and we got married in October.
Wow. And what is an Ekis wedding like?
It's beautiful. There's a book. You can follow that, or you can write your own. But there's no, I'm happy to say, there's no honour, obey, or anything like that. It's more about respecting, loving, and keeping each other close, and a lot of talk about being before God, which we both love because she's an Ekis as well.
How you talk a lot about God, and I've read a lot of, on your website about God. How do you view God?
I view God the same way I viewed God before. It's just I feel closer now. I feel we've connected. I feel I found a direct line, if you like, that we're having a two-way conversation.
But is God male, female?
No, I think
spirit,
it's, I think it's
soul, whatever.
It's neutral. I didn't hear a big, deep voice or a girly voice. I just actually, you just feel it in your heart when you're having a conversation. So I don't really pay attention to that aspect.
And I think that's the joy of this path over time, is that you deepen that relationship. And it's really about love. I mean, the whole path is about loving yourself, learning to love yourself more. And I found that being a gay man, being in San Francisco and all in those years, and then coming back to Australia, learning to love myself truly was something that I found through the teachings of Eck, and really just owning myself, you know, and then and teaching me how to sort of be more with other people and open and loving.
And you're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
You could join this. What is it? The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 Facebook page.
That's right. Yeah, you can go look there.
And there's going to be a link. Well, there is a link from there through to Eckencar. So get up there and like us, and we'll like you back, and then you know what's happening.
I was wondering, every time I see Eckencar written down or Eck written down, it's always all in capitals. I almost always say. I always see, you know, like something Eck, and Eck is always capital E-C-K. It's not like capital E and then lowercase C-K.
Right.
Is there any particular reason for that?
I honestly have no answer for that.
No, I don't either.
I just suddenly remembered, because everything I've seen, I always see, yeah, it in capitals.
It's trademarked. I know E-C-K is capitals is trademarked, so perhaps, I don't know.
How big is Eckencar around the world?
It's in every country because it's in Mauritius. When anything's in Mauritius, then I know it's in every country, because Mauritius is a very small country. So just judging, actually we're talking about numbers and people in religions before the show. When we have the worldwide, which happens on the 22nd of October, which is our spiritual new year, you can get up to 8,000 to 10,000 people turn up. So I don't know what the numbers are. These are just people that are coming to this seminar. So I'd guess it'd be about 30,000 perhaps worldwide.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I would suggest more, though. I think in Africa alone, I think we're growing at an extraordinary rate. Ghana, Nigeria, it's quite remarkable. I'd say more like 50 to 60,000 worldwide.
I'm quite, I guess, puzzled by that, because wouldn't there be a bit backlash to people that would join something like Eckencar in some of those countries?
I know in Ghana, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Genevieve, but I think that some of the early members of Eckencar knew people in government, and I know that the Prime Minister or the President of one of the countries, I think it might have been Ghana, but it might be Nigeria, came to Eck events. So it's, okay. Yeah, I would have thought the same thing too, because there's a very strong Christian groups in Nigeria especially, I think, and you hear about repression, but I've never heard anything about that with Eckencar in any country in Africa.
I guess this is, Eckencar is something that, I don't know, I find it very hard to get my head around.
Sure.
And I guess that's okay.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
And that if people want to learn more about it, that they come along and find out at your workshops?
Yeah. I think Eckencar is definitely a path of experience. So when people want to actually, I don't know, have some movement in their spiritual life, I think Eckencar is for you. I love the fact there's different religions for different states of consciousness, and everyone fits where they are. Mm. But like myself, wasn't quite satisfied there. It found me, I found, and I'm very happy where I am.
Do you find there's a lot of GLBTI people that find Eckencar and find that it's a fit for them, or...?
Certainly in San Francisco there were quite a few, or across the Bay Area.
Let's face it, there's lots of gay people in San Francisco, full stop.
across the states at the seminars where everyone would come from all over the country, there was quite a strong band of us. In Australia, there's a few, very many.
Yeah.
It might be just a case of that it seems like it's a case purely because people are allowed to be. It might be that probably everywhere there's people, of course there are everywhere that there's people who are gay, and just a lot of the time they're in religions where we're just all in denial about that. We certainly interview a lot of people who come from those backgrounds. So it's at least if whatever people are going to be, at least they're allowed to be it, which is wonderful.
Absolutely.
When I joined Eck and Co, I was about to join. It was one of the questions I asked.
Mm.
How does it view homosexuality? It mattered to me because if it was going to be a sin, I wouldn't have joined.
No.
What does Eck and Co believe about sin?
It's more like karma.
Right.
Like if I steal your wallet on my way out.
Well, that'd be a waste of time.
All right.
Try tails. Hey!
Rather than that being a sin, that's creating a karmic situation that it will be paid back somewhere along the way. So it's something that what you sow, you reap, so to speak, and that's you're very aware of that. So you, I guess, behave because you know it will come around.
And does some of that karma come from previous life?
Definitely.
Yes.
Because that's sort of what Buddhists believe, don't they? Yes. Sometimes you not suffer, but you're actually dealing with stuff in this life
that
came from a previous life.
When things don't make sense at all and you really want to know and you ask, you'll be shown a past life where you did the opposite. And then it makes dealing with the situation a lot easier.
So obviously you believe in reincarnation.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, soul, as we said before, no one has an individual. We don't see everybody having an individual soul. We say we're a spark of God, that everyone's a spark of God. And that soul takes on bodies in different times over the eons of life. And it's to have experience. And you experience perhaps a life of absolute horror. And then maybe in the next life, you're, a princess sitting in some throne somewhere. So I mean,
that sounds like
but it's all a lesson. It's all an opportunity to understand and deepen your relationship with the best part of who you are. And this is a path of love, and really that's what it's about.
Well, this has been such a fascinating discussion, and in fact, just to back you up, I have someone that did in fact write in to say exactly absolutely fascinating.
Okay.
Fascinating discussion. And we have had those few comments, and also I did want to say, someone else, we had a few people that did write in, one of which, Joy, can you stop clicking on things, please? Graham of Brunswick did want to also say keep up the great work, and he was signing up as well, and we did have a few people that were keeping up the great work. We had Nigel in St Kilda, and of course Ruth, who I know listens almost 24/7 on her iPad. So thank you all signing up there. We are coming down to the time where we wanted to say goodbye and wanted to really thank you for being on the show. It's been, like we said, absolutely fantastic. I think we've had a great time, haven't we,
Joy? It's been a really good show. And thanks to all the people who have joined up during the show too, and keep joining up.
Now, we did have another song that you guys had. This is Mahanta's Love. Is Mahanta an actual Eck figure, or is this by any chance?
Okay. Alex was talking about the two aspects of the living Eck Master. His name is Mahanta.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry about that. So I did want to confirm. So maybe we could just say, so the modern founder from 1965.
His name's Paul Twitchell.
That's Paul Twitchell.
The current one, his name is Harold Klemp.
Okay.
Mm.
And And I see, that's different from...
The Mahanta is like the dream master, so he's the spiritual master, if you like, that works with us on the inner.
I see. Thanks for taking me on that one.
That's
one
okay.
Get with the program, Tal.
I'm sorry. Well, I just will again say thank you so much, and I hope to have our faithful listeners listening again next week. It's every Thursday from 8 till 9, and you've been listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.